So close. And we're there. Hey, folks. Thanks for tuning into the BAMF podcast. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty, and here is our latest episode of Owen Explains It All. I love that intro. I can't even tell you why. It makes me feel good inside. And I'm your host, Mike Lafferty. I am here largely for my banter skills. And beneath us, adding co-host and banter skills as well to the mix, is Jacob Blackman. How are you doing, Jacob?
I am very well. It's been an okay day for me.
Sweet. And if you guys go back and check out yesterday, Jacob was on the show drawing a Slender Man.
Yes. Which is creepy as heck, by the way.
Thank you.
It's uber fucking creepy. So
it is. Are you going to be using that to like put stats on it?
I'll probably do Mutants Masterminds, Slender Man supplement at some point, certainly. Otherwise, it's going to be up for stock art. It was just done for fun, really. So anyone who needs a Slender Man, I have a new Slender Man art for stock art.
Would you like me to do a Starfinder version of the Slender Man and put it up on my blog and point to you as where you get great art like this?
Absolutely.
Okay, I'll make that happen later in the week. Yeah. And folks, yes, we're live. We are honestly working out like business deals on the air. That's how we do.
That's how this sausage is made, as they say.
And it is an ugly, ugly process.
This is the face Mike makes when he's blocking juvenile sausage puns. Owen K.C. Stevens is here,
yes, sir,
to explain it all. Owen, what are we explaining tonight?
So we're going to do something a little weird tonight. I watched the most recent episode of What If over the weekend. I really enjoyed it. And the title sort of gives away the plot. It is What If Zombies. So obviously I don't feel bad saying that there are zombies in this episode because it's called What If Zombies. But I'm not here to talk about zombies. People have done zombies to death. What I'm here to talk about is Doctor Strange's cape, his cloak of levitation. And the reason that that's what I'm going to talk about is that I noticed during this episode that that thing was really a character. I mean, I saw the original Doctor Strange movie, obviously, and folks, spoilers for Doctor Strange, and honestly, for the Disney Aladdin movies, and for What If, so if you're not up to date on the Zeitgeek, perhaps come back after you've watched all those things. I watched the original movie, and obviously it does stuff, and it acts like an independent creature during that movie. But in this case, Doctor Strange isn't around anymore, or at least not any useful living version of him. And the cloak still does stuff. It stops people, it grabs things, it makes tactical decisions. It is clearly a character. And it made me think of, as silly as this is, the flying carpet from the Disney animated Aladdin, especially, because they had an entire animated series where they kept up that trope, but also the live action version, which I actually kind of liked. I thought there were, well, it's not perfect. There were some things that were better and some things that were worse, but I liked some of the choices they made in it. And it occurred to me that it's just not, it's not impossible to make a textile player race, right? Where you can be a magic cloak or a magic cape or a magic carpet or a magic, the red shirt that Deadpool wears, whatever. And once you have some of those basic rules, once you have some of the things that you need to be able to do that, you can also then use to apply that for various kinds of animal companions and even drones, both of which are things that Starfighter has rules for. So, for example, one of the things that defines how these characters, because silly as it is, I really think they are more characters than props, one of the ways these characters move that is non-standard is that they have no problem sharing space with other people. And they can move with other people. And that means that one of the things that you could do is give them a racial ability, apparel, allowing them to share a space and sit on and move with someone else. And honestly, game mechanically, as soon as people realize that the cloak, can block attacks and pick people up and carry them, they're probably going to target it just like any other character. There's no reason that they wouldn't. So the fact that they're in the same space, as long as you've got rules to cover that, and As always, I will go over some of the details of how these rules will work on my blog, onkcstevens.com. We'll have that up, I believe, on the 14th of September. So if you're watching this then or later, it should already be up. You can go find it. As long as you've got those base rules, you can apply them to all sorts of things. A drone, a mechanics drone in Starfinder, could easily be reskinned as a magic cloak. And that's particularly useful because technomancers have an option to end up with a drone. It's one of the things, if you get fairly deep into the split off rules you have. And that means that you could, as a technomancer, take that drone option and then make that drone a cloak. And now you can do a technomancer Stephen Strange. You give the cloak a flying ability. There's already a saddle power for drones, and you can do most of that stuff. And the complicated things, the things that it's hard to make a magic item do, making tactical decisions, moving around, saving people. You know, in the What If episode, it very clearly liked Peter Parker. And if you're talking about a magic item, people have a tendency to try to make that game mechanical, right? Well, everyone make a charisma check and see who attunes. But as soon as you say, hey, this is an NPC, the cloak is an NPC, it's cloaky cloak face, it does what any other NPC does. And after the loss of Stephen Strange, it settles on our boy, the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. And by the way, that was a beautiful aside because one of the old What If episodes or comics was What If Peter Parker became Sorcerer Supreme. So, of course, he had the cake and the spider outfit. They kind of made a joke about that. He was like, you think I can pull this off? Well, maybe you'll grow into it, suggesting that that is a direction things could go. So that is the thing that I really took away that I was super excited about, was the idea of once you have player race rules for these things, you can then apply it to anything. And there are, of course, going to be people that say, hey, I'm not surprised that Alice Ping has made characters inspired by Aladdin's carpet. Morphing animated shield, perfect example. I was about to say, there are going to be people that are going to be like, who's going to want to play a cloak? And yet here we have right here, Alice. Hey.
Hi, Alice.
I mean, I rather infamously at one point in a superhero game played a 6-foot long starship that had a crew of tiny mites. So the starship was the character, and the mites were little skill bonuses, depending on who was on the deck at the time. Who was on the
command. It's because you love Micronauts.
It is, in fact, because I love Micronauts. That is exactly why I did it, although they were much smaller because it needed 1 6-foot starship to have a crew of like 120. But there are going to be people who would love the idea of getting to play a cape, a magic cape, a flying carpet. You could have, you know, wrist wraps that fling out and do stuff. And I don't like to tell people that anything is bad, wrong, fun. If everyone's having a good time, if everyone's making informed consent, then I'm all for you doing whatever you want. That support character role can be an important and fun role. And one of the great things about it is that it can immediately make a couple of characters very invested with each other. I think role-playing games lose some people because when it's not your turn, there is frequently not a lot to do. And depending on the game system, it can be not your turn a whole lot longer than it is your turn. Now, I don't have a problem with that most of the games I play because I play these games with my friends and I like hanging out with them and hearing them, and I'm trying to make my turn interesting for them, and I'm trying to pay attention on their turn so I can engage with them, and we're cracking jokes and we're talking back and forth, and we're trying to keep side chatter to a minimum, but you know, we do go on some legendary tangents, and I try and keep myself busy by doing things like typing game night quotes so that I'm not like answering rules questions when that's actually the GM's job if I'm not the GM. But if you take two characters, one of them says, hey, I want to play a wizard, and another one says, ooh, I want to be that wizard's magic cloak that's a little lippy and is a sidekick and is sometimes helping and sometimes doesn't do what it's told. Those two players are immediately involved with each other's actions and backgrounds and appearance. And the guy whose character isn't the cloak, the wizard that the cloak is settling on, gets this extra dose of cool, whereas the person playing the cloak probably is the sort of person that doesn't want to have to be in charge of negotiations. So you end up with that kind of dynamic. And I think that can be a lot of fun. And it was this episode, for whatever reason, that really made me think that can be done. We can make rules for that. We can make that a playable race. We can make that a drone option. You can make it as an NPC. So those are all things I'll be writing up and putting up on my blog.
And there's an easy precedent for it already that exists in the Starfinder / Pathfinder universe. Cloakers are an open game creature, and you know, considering this is unknown thousands of years or however many years it is removed from the Pathfinder universe, this could be a variant species of cloaker that is more beneficial, and they really like the symbiotic relationship of helping others instead of being the creepy things that cloakers normally are.
I mean, we could, if we wanted to, do the Vulcan and Romulan, you know, racial split, that the species at one point, one group went horrid underground aberrations that eat people, and the other became helpful haute couture. But I mean, we could also write, one of the great things about Starfinders, we could say, hey, it turns out just like human is a really broad range, and they've got a whole lot of different attitudes, and you can't pinhole them all in one look or what we could say. Yeah, it turns out one tiny little strain got all the press on Galarian, but that cloakers of a type are this broad type that have as many heroes as villains. You could do an entire reveal to players, right? Hey, welcome to the Cloaker Planet. And there's a big statue of a gold cloak that helped people. Alice points out sentient weapons. I am a fan of the cloak from Doctor Strange as a character, going back to the comics. And it's something that only some writers did a whole lot with, but they did then do a bunch. And a lot of the things that the cloak and, again, magic carpet do, you know, flying out to save people, wrapping things up, carrying things, refusing to go somewhere, those are all, in my opinion, really interesting ideas that when you look at it from, hey, here's a magic item, your frame of mind might be, I don't know if I want a magic item to do that much. But as soon as it becomes a character, and a character can be shot, and a character can die, and you know, you could have the Superman piece of art, but instead of Superman holding Supergirl, who's dead, it's your character holding their cloak, and their cloak is dead. Perhaps tongue lolling out of one side as fabric unravels. So that is the sort of thing where I'm not saying that's the most important takeaway from this episode of What If. We could absolutely do rules for, you know, viral zombies, which are really more like ghouls in Starfinder terminology or vampires, or right. You know, they were clearly self-willed, sentient, undead. They had some tactics. They could still use equipment. That's almost just a reskinning job, right? It's just a matter of how long does it take and what do they look like. I did want to say, I found it fascinating that in that episode, the zombie plague came from the quantum universe. So it was a quantum plague. And as soon as you have the words quantum plague, which I thought was brilliant, the players know you're not going to justify what's going on at all. And here, you know, we very much specifically have the cloak hanging around and doing some stuff. I'm envisioning the cloak sitting with a pipe of its own, right? It doesn't actually smoke, just likes to hold a pipe and see what it looks like. Or maybe it likes the smell. So
trying to keep moths off of it.
Yeah, I mean, we could have an ancient war between the cloak people and the mothmen.
You know, I remember hearing of some fantasy novel, maybe Penny Arcade invented this as a joke, where sentient wardrobes were a big deal. And one of the Penny Arcade, actually, and I remember now there was a Penny Arcade trade where they actually, you know, they pretended there was this novel series about, you know, and a major feature was sentient wardrobe. And they had several pages detailing the comical fights between the fan factions, some of who were big favors of this interpretation of the sentient wardrobes, and others who were more into the cosplay and sexual aspects of it, and it was a big mess. But once we're talking about sentient heroic characters in RPG, are we that far from like Suicide Squad with mimics? Because I kind of want to see a Suicide Squad with mimics.
I talked a little bit about Suicide Squad in a previous Owen Explains It All.
I remember, I was there.
And I talked a little bit about Forlorn Hope as a campaign concept. So I think that's a great idea. I in one of the Starfinder Adventure Path adventures I wrote for the Threefold Conspiracy, I had a mimic handgun that had been created by a group of Greys as a special project. And my original draft, it's Squimic the Mimic, and it's a gun. And in my original draft, it talks. Now, the developers decided, hey, we can't introduce this NPC that you carry around with you through all the rest of the adventure that no one else is ever going to mention because all the adventures are being written at the same time. So obviously the writers couldn't do that. So they removed that part, and it just became a shape-changing weapon variable upgradable weapon. But between that and having done Mike the Mimic, who does package security for the Fonts and Bismarck delivery and security service in my Really Wild West game, I love the idea of, especially, this is the sort of thing that would do well for a one-shot or a con game, right? You could have the Mimic Commandos, who might or might not be a Suicide Squad, and you could do something like, hey, your job is to get down into this dungeon, reconnoiter, and if this particular thing happens, deal with it. Oh, well, how are we going to get down there? Oh, we're going to sell you to some first level adventurers. Don't worry about that. They'll carry you. Your job, you know, yeah, be the sword, be the shield. One of you will be a saddle. Don't worry about that. It's just when you get there, keep your eyes out, report back. And I think that could work really well in the right kind of game. For things like this, you frequently have to decide what is your level of Wahoo. I like, as a game master, having rules to cover a wide range of Wahoo options. And then I will pick which Wahoo option do I think is reasonable based on the campaign and the players and the tone. So I think this is the sort of thing where there are some clear examples in fiction of sentient swords, going all the way back to Stormbringer, my master is my slave, cloaks. Certainly the One Ring has a will of its own. It decides whether it's going to hang on someone's finger or not. And people have done some really interesting things with magic item characters and sentient magic items. But having so many really good animated and live action examples of the soft textile as a character, because we've got now live action and animated Doctor Strange and Aladdin. So carpet and cloak of levitation have a lot of representation. To me, that bumps it up from the level of, yes, I guess maybe this is something that someone might do, to the sort of thing that, you know, I don't know about everyone else, but when I was 13, my D&D games had the Lochnar and AT-ATs marching on Greyhawk, and the Heart Bow from the movie The Archer, and the Three-Bladed Sword from The Sword and the Sorcerer. Those were the things I loved to put in my games. And again, as long as everyone's having a good time, I don't have a problem cranking up the level of Wahoo.
Cool. That is some pretty awesome stuff. We seem to have packed a whole lot of content into just 20 minutes. Do we want to wrap things up early tonight?
Yeah, I think I will give everyone an opportunity to think about what else you might be able to do with this concept. You happen to bring up a piece of art of a living head in a jar being carried by the cloak. So I got to say, you could do that character as a reskinned contemplative. Mm-hmm. Just instead of a contemplative as a species, it's a human head in a jar. Futurama references be danged.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a pretty cool idea. I was thinking there's so much potential out there for just a campaign model based on this. But I think we've already explored that probably as much as we want to right now. But yeah, it's fun stuff. Jacob, did you have any closing thoughts before we wrap things up?
Not hugely. It's just when we were talking about this concept, I was really going through Starfinder, and it was really dawning on me, just there aren't sentient magic items in Starfinder that I can find. You know, you have plenty of robots, you have, you know, artificial intelligences, and ships have virtual intelligences, but I am surprised that there aren't more sentient magic items, considering magic is supposed to be a big thing in Starfinder.
It is. And of course, anything that was in Pathfinder, you can assume is in Starfinder somewhere, right? So they're out there. It is quite possible that in the future, when you can go to Sears and buy a ray gun for $29.95, you are less likely to put up with a lippy longsword.
That is certainly true.
Well, hey, that art I shared earlier, I feel like I should put this out there because I love this series. And I think it's the kind that might not be around too long. The image I shared earlier of Doctor Strange's capes or in a smoky room was from the latest miniseries of Defenders. That's limited to 5. This is the preview or the advertisement page for issue 2, which is out just last week. And the way they do, they are in the previous multiverse before the current one was birthed. And as you can see, the title of it is Galactus's Mom Has Got It Going On. And I'm pretty sure that's her there. And if you're a Marvel nerd, you probably get the geek reference. And if not, the last 30 seconds has meant nothing to you. But it's a fun book. It's cool. The art is amazing. So Defenders, Comixology now. So
check it out.
Check it out. All right, guys. Anything else or we're calling it quits?
No, I think we've gone from animation to movies to sentient magic items to Alice Ping to comics. I think we're good.
Sweet. We have a new Starfinder developer diary by Jason Tondro that just went live on our channel like an hour ago. I'm going to be uploading it along with this one to the Podbean, so it'll be on iTunes the next 24/48. So check it out. And I know Paizo has got big announcements at Gen Con. I can't say I don't know anymore than that. I've heard there's going to be big things.
Yeah, so Thursday there's going to be a big State of Paizo, what's going on, what's coming next year set of things from Eric Mona. It's the sort of thing that you used to announce at PaizoCon, and there was no PaizoCon this year, and there's a virtual one. But so there's the Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern time for 1 hour Paizo keynote address with publisher Eric Mona. And I believe that will all be carried on the No Direction Network, all of the seminars and stuff. So you should be able to go find it and watch it.
Sweet. Sounds great. So keep your eyes open for that. And let's play our musical outro because it's really awesome and I love it. Ah, man, that makes me wish I was chugging something high alcohol content and wearing a long black trench coat like back in the day. So anyway, Jacob, Owen, thank you guys very much for coming on. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks, Mike.
To all of our listeners and viewers, especially you, Alice, thanks for tuning in and commenting. We will catch you all next time on Owen Explains It All.
Bye, folks.